This is Outspoken, the podcast that's not afraid to say exactly what you're thinking.
Our names are Amy, Kate and Sophie Torber. We're identical triplets, but we often don't have identical opinions. So sometimes things can get heated.
Outspoken covers all things reality TV, influencers, entertainment and issues facing women.
That is so fetch.
Thank you.
Welcome to our Under the Influence edition of Outspoken. Today on the show, we're joined by the amazing Cherie Louise. The 28-year-old from Melbourne is a model, writer, and disability advocate who isn't afraid to stand up for what she believes in. At just 6 years of age, Cherie sadly lost her leg to cancer, and just last year, she was cast into the media spotlight after vile trolls bullied her for merely revealing the fact she's an amputee. Cherie's motto in life is simple. She's not here to inspire able-bodied people, but she's here to help those that are disabled. We spoke with the talented, funny, and kind 28-year-old fresh from her first virtual runway show for lingerie brand Bluebella.
We thought we'd get into today's episode by firstly asking how you've been navigating your ISO life so far.
I've been doing pretty well, thanks considering. Obviously I speak only of my little bubble, which is my own home. I know there's not so great things going on out there. But myself, I've been doing quite well. I get fatigued quite quickly, so I've been able to get a lot of rest being an ISO, really working on just taking care of myself and working on little projects and so on. So I've been doing quite well, thanks considering.
And are you able to fill us in a little bit about your situation work-wise? Because we were speaking off microphone about it, and it's absolutely shocking what's going on.
Yeah, so basically I was working in a front of house position, so dealing a lot with the public, and we had a few staff members that got confirmed, and we were asking for some protective measures like screens and stuff to be put up, and unfortunately we didn't get them, and due to my lacking immune system, I decided that it would be best for me to stay home, somewhere that's safe. So I had to leave my job, and so I've been focusing on writing. I started a Patreon, and that's honestly how I am living right now. I would not really be getting by if it wasn't for that. So it's really pushed me to kind of work on my own writing and my advocacy as well. So it's a little bit of, I hate saying blessing in disguise when it's a terrible thing that's happening with COVID, but it's helped push me in the right direction personally as well.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a great way to look at it, as I suppose a blessing in disguise, because sometimes such positive things do come out of awful situations. For anyone interested, what are you writing about in particular?
So I've started just writing about my life. So as an amputee, I get a lot of questions about what's happened, what it was like and so on. And I do, it can be quite draining to be asked this all the time and to have to repeat yourself when you're not really in a position where you're prepared to answer those questions. So I started my Patreon as a way to kind of document my experience, and people who are interested and are supporting me, I can share that with them. And I decided to do that for Patreon because it's kind of a store on the internet and so on. Anyone can share it if they really wanted to, but the people that have immediate access to it are people that are actually financially supporting me. So I feel safer sharing the more intimate details with them, if that makes sense.
Mm. Well, that's such a great idea, because I know being triplets, we get asked some really bizarre questions and quite invasive questions, and I'm sure it's probably nothing to the extent that you get asked, but it's astonishing some of the questions people feel the right to ask you.
Yeah, like the most common one is, oh, what happened to your leg? And although people think that that is innocent or well-meaning, it's actually, it can throw you off. Like, for example, I can be out at a bar with my friends and someone comes up, they don't say hello, they don't ask what my name is, they just go, what happened? And then it's like, okay, well, I'm just having, a cheeky drink, and now you're bringing up the worst moment of my life. And it's just like, all you're going to do, if I tell you the answer, you're going to go, oh, that's so sad. Like, no one's going to hear cancer and go, oh, cool. You know, they're just going to go, oh, that's so sad. They're going to look at me with a look of pity. And then they're going to walk away and carry on with their night. And, it's just unnecessary. I'm like, you didn't gain anything out of that apart from satisfying your own curiosity. Yeah. But you sprung me off of, wherever I was at with enjoying myself. So people, you know, think it's well-meaning to ask those questions, but they don't realize that it's like asking for your medical history. It's asking you to relive trauma just out of nowhere and without actually showing any interest in you. So they don't know anything about me. They just want to know about that one thing. Mm. And then they walk away. And then I also get questions like, silly questions, you know, like, can you have sex? And can you drive, those kinds of things. But it's just kind of like, it's all very I don't know, they're just shallow questions. Yeah,
I can't believe people can actually think they have the right to come up and ask you that, because I know, as Amy said, on a small scale we can understand, because we have had the weirdest questions, like, were you guys joined by the head,
did you get your period at the same time?
What?
Oh my god.
And we have our best friend who is normally around us, and she I think is more tired of the questions than we are. Do you have that friend that kind of just answers them for you because you're just sick of answering the questions?
Like, when it comes to the questions, most of the time my friends will kind of just like roll their eyes, or they kind of look at me because they know that I will respond however I want to respond. And it does vary a lot. It depends on the situation I'm in, if I'm what mood I'm in. If I'm in a situation where I don't want to cause any like tension, like I'm at a house party or something, you know, when you've got to spend the rest of the night around these people and you don't want to kill the vibe, I'll kind of just tell them and then move on. But if I'm out and I'm like around people and I can just kind of move on and get away from whoever I don't like, I can just be like, it's none of your business, or, you know, just not tell them, or I can just bullshit them and say something completely false. But, it's just, it depends. Like, my friends usually look to me to answer, but they more get bothered by things that I ignore. Like, when we're walking and about and people are staring at me, my friends will get more bothered than I am, because I taught myself how to just block all of the staring out, whereas they're not used to it. So they just see all of it and they just like kind of take it all in, whereas I'm just like, whatever, this is part of it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Well, I feel a little invasive asking this question now, but I suppose for those who haven't heard your story, are you able to tell us, I suppose, about that life-changing moment when you were 6 years old?
Yeah, of course. And I think it's important to note, in these situations where, you know, we've talked about that we're going to be talking about these things, I'm prepared to answer these questions. So I don't want you to feel bad about asking these questions when it's something that I've voluntarily gone into as well. So basically, when I was 6 years old, I started to experience pains in my hip and I was getting all kinds of temperatures and so on. So we had a bunch of tests done. I just remember lots of scans and lots of doctors. I was 6 years old, like, so I don't remember a lot, but I remember those things. And then I remember being flown to Auckland. So I was in New Zealand at the time, and Auckland is where the kind of country's biggest children's hospital is. So I got flown there. And then I was sitting in the corridor of the hospital, and my parents were in a room with the doctors, and they came out and then they told me I had cancer. And I only knew what cancer was because not long before that, I was watching TV and I saw a little girl on TV with cancer. Probably jinxed myself. I was like, I hope I never get cancer. And then next minute. So I got told that and I knew what that was. And the only thing I knew about cancer was that you lose your hair. So that's what I immediately thought. I was like, oh no, I'm going to lose my hair, freaking out. And it was a pretty messy time. Like, my parents were recently divorced, so they were dealing with that. And then all of a sudden, you know, your daughter's got cancer. So it was a very messy time trying to navigate everything with my family as well. And from there, you know, I was in hospital for 3 months before my surgery. And they told me before my surgery, they pulled me into a room to tell me what could happen on the other end. So they talked about having, I guess, the cancer removed, and then I would have issues with my leg and I would spend a long time in a cast and that kind of thing. So they started with the best case scenario, and then I started to freak out and I stopped listening because I was just panicking, I guess. And I didn't actually hear them when they told me that I could actually lose my leg. So I went into my surgery not knowing that that was a possibility. And then when I woke up, I found out that I had lost my leg, and I started freaking out to my mom, being like, you didn't tell me, you know, that I could lose my leg and what's going on. And she's telling me, you know, we did, you just weren't listening. And I was in ICU when that happened. So then I was only in ICU for a day. And I just remember I kept coming in and out of sleep and just like feeling my hip and being like, what's going on? Because I couldn't quite comprehend that something wasn't there. It felt like something was there. If that makes sense, because it felt different. So I was like, what's on my hip? But it was like, nothing's there. So it was a weird feeling doing that. And then when I got out, it was just, I don't remember much after getting out of ICU in regards to being, I guess, sad about or in shock about losing my leg. I think after that, it was more just, how do we keep moving? What am I going to do? Like, do I get a leg? Like, how am I going to get around and that kind of thing? So I also didn't really, at that age, I feel like I was just kind of going with it. I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't have a certain way of life that was being interrupted. And I was just taking it as it came. It didn't feel, I don't know, it probably would have been a bit surreal as opposed to being older and you've got a way of life and you've got all your habits and things that you're used to and then you get thrown out of that. So I don't know, I feel like being a kid, it was probably a lot easier for me to manage because I didn't really understand the implications of life and death and loss and all of that.
Well, definitely. I mean, what was that like for you having to go back to school? And I suppose you hadn't really thought about the fact you might lose your leg. Like this was obviously you're still processing all of this news.
Because I feel like school can be horrendous enough without having something that makes you
stand out
from others.
Yeah. So when I went back to school, so I think I was like seven by that, or seven and a half, maybe eight. I can't remember. I'm terrible with time.
That's all right.
I'll blame that on the chemo because it affects your memory, so I can blame that. But So I was in hospital for 10 months all up. Then I got out, went home, full clearance. Like I didn't have the cancer come back. So I got through remission as a clean sweep. So that was great. But I went back to school, primary school. And the biggest thing I was worried about was that I had a wig. And I was really scared that everyone would know that I had a wig. And then I went back and primary school was pretty chill. Because I was already in primary school when I got diagnosed. So when I got diagnosed and I left, they had like a school assembly where they talked about me and what was happening and stuff. So the whole school kind of already knew, and they knew me before. And I think that made it more personal, like of a story. Like they knew that I was going through something horrible and then I come back. So it was kind of, I guess they were less likely to bully me because they'd all been waiting to hear what happened. So I didn't have too much difficulty in primary school. Then in New Zealand, we have intermediate school, which is like 2 years between primary and high school.
Oh, really?
That's when you're, So that's when you're like 11, 12.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went on to intermediate school and things were okay there. I didn't really get bullied there. Oh, actually, I lied. I got bullied. I got, anonymous letters.
Oh, really?
From a girl in my class. I totally know who it was now, but back then I didn't know. Like, it's so obvious now that I look back on it. But, like, back then it was this big mystery and everyone was trying to figure it out, like, all the teachers and stuff. But she just wrote me, like, these anonymous letters and she was, like, pretending to be someone else. Like, she was trying to frame this other girl.
Oh, my gosh. Class.
Yeah, it was really nasty and she was just telling me how ugly I am and because I have one leg and I'm just like super nasty, like really long letters too. Like she really went in, but she was obviously a very sad girl. Like she wasn't you know, popular or anything like that, so obviously a very sad sad kid. And when the kids in the older classes, they got shown a letter as well, and they were all mortified and they all stood up for me and, you know, made sure I was okay and stuff. So that was nice. But I did get bullied, but it was always behind my back or anonymous. The only time people would bully me to my face, like even through high school, right? Got to high school and the people that would bully me would be like strangers. So I'd be walking home from school and a little kid would yell out names at me. Or my friends bullied me, but behind my back. Like they would never like they would never ever talk about my leg in front of me. And then I later found out that they were all just like constantly making leg jokes whenever I wasn't around.
Oh, gosh. That's
that kind of really sucked because we were really close, you know.
Well, it broke my heart because I read somewhere that you said when growing up, you felt like you had accepted the fact that you wouldn't end up with someone and you'd be alone. Can you talk us through why you felt that way and why you felt like you wouldn't find love during your teenage years?
Yeah. So I think when I like when I came to terms with it, I was probably more like I was around 10 years old probably when I came to terms with it. Like there was this phase probably from like, you know, 8 to 10, 11 where I would just every night all I did was just sit in bed and I would look at old photos of myself and just be sad and just be like, oh, what the hell is going to happen when I'm older? And so I came up with this plan in my head. I was like, okay, well, you know, I'd never seen an amputee girl in a relationship or in love, so I was like, okay, that's probably not going to happen. So what we're going to do is we're going to get rich, I'm going to get a really cool job, and it's not going to matter.
I love that.
So I had this whole plan. I was like, we're going to be alone, we're going to have like lots of pets, and we're going to be sweet because we're going to have lots of pets.
That sounds pretty amazing. Who needs a guy when you're rich with pets? I mean,
so that was my plan. But yeah, I definitely just think I definitely thought that I would never fall in love, and like my mom had a new partner around that time, and I was just like seeing them fall in love like really upset me because I was like, oh, I'm never gonna have that. So yeah, I spent a lot of time being upset about that, and it was obviously just because I'd never seen it before. Like it just wasn't a thing, you know. I was the only time I ever saw amputees was once a year on the Paralympics, and that was it. I never saw any love stories or anything, and the way I was kind of, you know, I guess treated like, you know, a boy, you know, when people have schoolyard crushes and stuff like that, it was never me. So I was just like, well, all right, well, I need to come up with another plan then. And that's what I did. And obviously I was wrong. Like, that's not how things were going to be when I got older, but that's definitely what I thought when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, you, just to put it out there, we gauge from social media that you do have your own love story. Is that right?
Yeah. We've stalked you on social media. Yeah. That's what Kate's trying to say.
And in you a really
very loved up.
In a really awkward way. Like, I've seen your loved up photos.
Yeah, so back when, I think I was 20 at the time, so we're talking like 8 years ago. So I was living in the Gold Coast and I was visiting my best friend in Melbourne. And she was telling me about a friend who just moved to the Gold Coast. And this is quite confusing. I was actually in the process of moving to Melbourne, right? So I'm like hanging with my best friend in Melbourne and I've got a few months until I move. And she's like, oh, so yeah, my friend has moved up there. You guys should hang out. And I'm like, oh yeah, cool. And she's telling me about him. And then I'm like, oh, I know that like, we follow each other on Twitter. So we actually already kind of knew each other. So I felt like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Invited him over for drinks and we became friends. And then, you know, I still moved to Melbourne, even though we, like, got along so well. I was like, I'm moving to Melbourne. Like, I can't, you know, I'm not going to stay in the Gold Coast for some casual thing. And then I kind of thought that it wasn't going to go anywhere because we were in different states at that point. But we still kept casually dating for quite a few years. And then I ended up moving back to be with him. And we've been together for about 4 years now. So then we moved back to Melbourne. So we've been like back and forth a lot. But yeah, things are going really well. We live together in Melbourne. I've still got all my pets.
I'm not rich yet. Do you have the pets? What kind of pets do you have?
We've got a cat and two dogs. Aww. So yeah, the cat was a stray. He found us and we couldn't find his owners. We adopted him. We got one dog from a rescue, and then we got another dog from a friend's litter, unexpected litter. So just a bunch of lost babies that we took in.
And the wealth comes next. That's the next.
Yeah, I hope so.
You mentioned that you didn't feel represented, and I feel like you've spoken a lot in the past, or you've been interviewed in the past, about the representation of disabled women in the media and fashion. What's your viewpoint on that? Do you see it changing at all?
Yeah, definitely. So I've always, you know, wanted to get into it. You know, this is why I've gotten into modeling and that kind of thing, because the more disabled people that we have involved, the more we can shape our own stories and the way that we're portrayed. So, you know, I'm seeing it change now, but basically before I did, it was always just the best and worst case scenario. You know, all I'd see on TV is Paralympian, you know, talking about elite athletes. You know, I'm like, that's not for me. You know, I'm not an athlete. It's just like, you know, looking at Olympians, it's a huge achievement. Or you'd see the other end of it, which is like a sob story, a pity party. So you'd have a disabled character on TV, and it's just like a plot device, you know, it's about something tragic that's happened to them, and now they're depressed, and, you know, it's this big sob story about this person. And we don't see the most common lives of disabled people, which is, you know, our everyday people who live full lives, and, you know, they're fashionable, they're in love, they're working an office job, you know, they're doing everyday things. But we never see that. We never see a disabled lead who is just hanging out with their friends, going and getting Starbucks and gossiping about boys and having, you know, school drama and stuff like that. It's always the extremes. So I found that super unrelatable, because I'm like, well, none of these people are me. And it just seems inaccurate, which I found a lot of people feel as well. And a few years ago, I found a woman called Mama Cax on Instagram, and she's unfortunately passed away last year, which is very sad. But she has the same amputation as me, which is quite rare to have the whole leg plus the left half of the pelvic bone removed. So it's quite rare. So I've never actually found someone else that had that amputation. And I found her on Instagram, and she's this, she was a model. She was like a lifestyle blogger. She had this huge following. She was in the Rihanna's Savage Fenty runway show. Like, she was just kicking goals.
Wow.
And she was the first person that I saw. And she was like posting photos, like in a swimsuit at the beach and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, like this is what I want, you know, like this is what I need. And, you know, she was the person that, you know, I've never in my whole life up until, I think last year, gone to the beach in a swimsuit. Like, I just didn't go to the beach. And, last year I went, and it was because she had posted photos in a swimsuit. Her scars were showing and she looked great. And I was like, man, like, what am I doing? You know, like, I'm just wasting so much time. I haven't been to the beach with my friends in my whole life. Like, so it was just seeing her do it, I was like, oh my God, this is so great. And it's so sad that we lost her, but just seeing people that are like accurate to what I aspire to be is just so important.
But even that story just shows how powerful it is to have somebody like you, as in like all of us, represented in a way.
And I saw you, and also, you know, doing a stalk of your Instagram, a deep stalk, I saw the photos of you at the beach, and you were bloody killing it. You looked amazing.
And there's going to be so many young girls who follow your Instagram as well that might be in a similar position and be like, oh my God, that's me, and I'm being represented, and I love that.
Yeah, totally.
Going into that kind of that field of feeling represented in the media, is that what enticed you to appear in the Clio magazine back when you were 20?
Yeah, I think I was at a point in my life where I was kind of stuck, and I was just I really wanted to just make a move, if that makes sense. Like, I was like, I'm moving to Melbourne and I'm doing this magazine feature. So like, I went and tracked down one of the writers for Clio, and I like slid in her DMs, and I was like, hey, do you want to do a story about me? and she was like, yeah. And my best friend's a photographer, so we did a shoot, and we did the shoot, just gave them everything they needed to do a feature on me, right? And it was pretty cool because I like did the shoot myself. I kind of had control about what images were going to them, as opposed to them doing the shoot and then picking everything. So for my first feature, it was pretty comfortable. They sent me like a preview of the article before it came out, so I got to like, you know, ask for any changes. So that was super accommodating, which was really nice. And I was just I was just at a point where I felt a bit restricted because most of my life was like online, and I felt like a lot of people didn't know my story, and I felt like a lot of people didn't even know that I was an amputee, and I was just kind of tired of being self-conscious and kind of apprehensive about what would happen if they did know. I was like, oh, what if, you know, they found out I've got one leg, and then the attitude towards me kind of changes. And I just got tired of that, and I was like, look, I'm just going to just do this. I'm just going to drop this article, and then people can deal with it, and however they take it is up to them. And it got received well. Like, obviously it's all I had that people would be mean to me, and I would lose friendships or anything like that. So it was received super well. Everyone loved it. It was just a way of me just breaking through my own fear. And that's what I've kind of kept doing, is like, whenever I'm self-conscious about something, I just kind of break through. Like with that beach story, I just like went out, did it, took a photo, dropped it on Instagram, and I was like, okay, you can all deal with it. Everyone's seen it now.
I love that. Who you cares? Did it through Clio magazine as well. Just like the biggest magazine
just
ever.
Just a low key, you know.
Well, for obviously some positive, like lots of positive attention came with it, but I've read that there also came a little bit of strange attention. And for those who haven't heard of it before, can you tell us about what I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, a devotee? Is that the right way to pronounce it?
Yeah.
Somebody's not good with devotee. Sorry.
It's okay. A devotee is essentially a person who has a fetish towards amputees. So I didn't know that this group of people existed up until the Clio article came out, because prior to that, I had no digital presence of being an amputee. It was all, you know, just kind of private conversations. So this article comes up. It came out in print first. So it came out in print. That was pretty chill. But then it went onto their website afterwards. So when it went digital, that's when I started getting all these like Facebook friend requests. And I'm like, all these profiles were a bit sus. Like, I would go on there and it would be someone who is presenting as an amputee when they were very obviously not. Like, there would be like an obvious Photoshop job, or like just like sharing different photos of different amputees, and just obvious.
So the alarm bells were going right now at this point.
Yeah, and I was just like, why are these people adding me? And then they were messaging me. Some of them were actually like pretending to be amputees to message me and start a conversation with me. You know, they send me a message like, oh, hey, I lost my leg and I hate my life, can you help me? And I'm like, no, that's not how we talk to each other. Like, yeah, you know, like we don't send each other messages being like, I hate my life, please help. No.
It's like, no, a real catfish. Like,
yeah. They kind of catfish me into like helping them. And I'm like, you're faking trauma to try and strike up a conversation with me. That's fucked up.
Wow.
But then, and like, I don't judge, you know, people for having fetishes. I'm not like judgmental about that at all. People are into different things. It's when they're projecting that onto me and they think that they're entitled to things from me because I fit their fetish, that's where I get a bit annoyed. I'm like, look, just because you have a fetish for people like me does not mean that I owe you.
Yeah, they're acting like you're some sort of sexual object or something.
And when they're catfishing you too, and then trying to pretend that they've got you know how you deceptive. Feel. Mm. Yeah, that's very deceptive. That's very. I'm so interested to hear that, because you know I've never heard of that before. That's a underbelly of.
Yeah, they'll try anything to get in the door, kind of thing. And look, I do have a lot of people who I'm pretty sure are devotees who are very respectful, and they do not ask me for things. They just observe, follow my Instagram. I'm like, cool, like, just that's fine. But when they send me, you know, like DMs, and they're like, oh, I'll give you $100 if you send me a video of you like walking, and I'm like, what?
Oh my gosh,
like, no,
like, no thank you.
Yeah, pretty much. So $100, that's where I draw the line. I'm like, don't demand things of me, just, you can just watch.
Wait a sec, this is how you could get rich, just charge them 10k.
You gotta up the price.
That's right. Well, at the end,
oh my god.
I was going to say, well, at the end of last year, you were caught up in a media storm of sorts because of one tweet that you put out. Can you tell us about what happened?
So basically, I made a joke. I was just having a bit of a laugh. So I was on Twitter, and someone tweeted, tell me your age and something you cannot do. And so I just tweeted a little inside joke for my followers. I don't have many followers. So I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm 27 and I can't cross my legs. And then I was like, haha, and then went to sleep. And then someone who followed me but didn't, obviously I didn't pay enough attention to know that I was an amputee, they retweeted it. You know how you quote tweet?
Yeah.
And you like kind of, yeah, they quote tweeted it. And they were like, LMAOY. And I was like, I was just like, and all I did was quote tweet it again. So it was like a little Vushka doll of a joke. But I like quote tweeted it again just with a photo of me, just like a full body photo. And I just dropped that and I was like, sweet, done. Yeah, just a bit of a laugh, super lazy joke. And then I started getting the retweets. And then like a few people with big followings retweeted it. And then next minute, I think it got up to 9,000 retweets. And wow. Then like, I can't remember how many likes, like in the tens of thousands. And so, and then it turned from like people laughing with me to people laughing at me to just like a commentary from random men as to whether or not they would fuck me. Mm-hmm. And they would just like tagging their friends and be like, bro, would you still hit that? Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, oh, it depends, you know, what their stump looks like and all this stuff. And I'm just like, one, why are you tagging me? Like, take it to the DMs if you want to have your little fucking bro hype up about sex stuff. And they're just like,
I can't believe these people are willing to put their name and faces to these disgusting comments. Like, what the fuck is wrong with people? And
they weren't even, you know, like those... like troll profiles, you know, they have like fake pics and stuff. They were all just like, they were just like blatant bros with their faces showing, wearing like school shirts and like,
oh my gosh,
just like I could obviously like easily identify most of these people.
Yeah.
And so just turned into this commentary. There was like a French guy who made a comment about how like it'd be easy to rape me because I can't get away.
Oh my god. What?
And what else were they saying? Just a lot of, and then a lot of like the same joke over and over again, just like a lot of lazy jokes. And it was just annoying. Like I wasn't I didn't like shed a tear over these people. Like I was just like, don't get me wrong, I was obsessed with reading all the replies. Like I read like every reply I got, but it was just annoying because they were making the same joke. I reckon I had like 100 people make the same joke. And then like every now and again it would get picked up and people thought it was hilarious. And I'm like, no, it's not funny. Already been said.
Yeah.
I'm just getting mad that people were getting like engagement out of jokes that went there.
Yeah. If you're gonna be fuckwits, at least be original about it.
That's right. Yeah.
So I was like replying here and there, like when someone made the same joke, I would send them like a collage of everyone making that same joke. And then they would like delete tweets. And then it got picked up on Reddit. I don't know if you guys use Reddit, I don't, but
I've seen threads on there.
I woke up in the morning and I had like a bunch of messages being like, oh, you're on the front page of Reddit. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means. But apparently it means a lot of people were seeing your photo. And it was someone making the same joke that everyone was making. It's like, you know, it's like face 7 out of 10, body 6 out of 10, legs 1 out of 2.
Oh my gosh.
So it's been made like 100 times. And like the first time that that joke actually took off, it was an actual amputee like making that joke. And so now it's just hundreds of people taking it and not being funny. So yeah, it was that joke. And then it just like popped off on Reddit. I was getting all these messages, same jokes, same wild people. And then I talked about it in a private Facebook group. I was just like, yeah, I'm getting these trolls, that's weird. And there was a journo in the Facebook group. And she saw what I was talking about, and she went and like saw all the tweets and stuff like that. And then she sent me a DM on Twitter and she was like, hey, do you mind if I write a story about the tweets and stuff? And I was like, oh, let me sleep on it, because like, you know, like if I do a story, is it gonna make it worse? Are people gonna get worse? Because as we know, that's how things work. And then I slept on it. I woke up and I was like, well, no one's going to say anything worse than the thousands of tweets that I've already gotten. Like, let's be real. And I was like, yeah, that's probably just going to end up like in the back of the lifestyle section, what else? And then so I was like, yeah, okay, let's do it. And I did it. And then I like, went to work and the story came out. And then I started getting all these DMs from like every major news outlet. Australia being like, hey, can we share your story? I'm like, may as well, whatever. Like, you know, these are just the people asking. You know how a lot of publications, they don't even ask. They just go ahead and copy the story and publish. So I'm like, whatever.
These the
people
Daily
are
Mail.
Asking me. I can have some control over what they post if I, you know, do it this way. So I did a few of them. And then by the time I got home from work, it was like front page of like every news website. Like all the major ones in the country and even New Zealand where I'm from. So I started, and that was unexpected, right? So that's the bit that like kind of shook me, was that I got home and I logged onto the news and my face was the first thing. Like the first thing is just my big ass face.
And that's confronting, isn't it?
You're like, is it a slow news day or?
Yeah, and I'm sure one of you know what this is like, to have your face all over the news and you're just like, oh, this isn't like the greatest like thing to be known for, you know? This is going to be the first thing that comes up when people Google me. And so that's what shook me, and I actually had a bit of like a panic when that happened. My boyfriend walked in and I was just like, it's everywhere. Because, I don't know, there was a big difference between thousands of the people on Twitter that I do not know saying things. I do not care about these people, to being all over the news, and I've got all of these people I know seeing it. And like, I had like school teachers messaging me, like my family messaging me, like people just like I haven't spoken to, but they all know me, are suddenly messaging me. And it was just like this unwanted merger of Twitter and in real life. So that was like the most shocking part of it, was how much it got picked up, and it went worldwide after that. And I was just, it was just strange being like, oh great, like this is what everyone's gonna know me for.
It's funny, the people that come out of the woodwork when something like that happens, and you're like, oh my god, you know, I forgot about you.
So what was the coverage like from country to country? Did it differ? Because I'm assuming that the original report probably would have been a great story, but then did it change as it sort of got picked up from other publications?
Like most publications, they were fine, you know, like your Western ones were just your average. I did do myself a favor. I did not read any comments on the news articles, like on Facebook and stuff, because that's where all like all the boomers come out and stuff, and then they did a bit, what do you expect? This is what you deserve. I was getting that on Twitter as well, but it was a lot of that when the news articles came out. Like, what do you expect when you put photos of yourself online?
People are so disgusting. Isn't it crazy, though, how you can just get such a different reaction? Like, you'll read some comments of people and they'll be like, oh, love you, love you. And then the other one's like, hate you. Like, it's just crazy how people can take such different things from articles.
Yeah, I had a guy read it, a Melbourne guy. A guy goes, reads this article about how I've been trolled online, people saying horrible things about me. And then his reaction, try and find out where I live.
Oh my gosh.
He like tweeted me being like, oh, girl from Frankston complains about getting trolled online, and you know, then girl goes and shares more stuff or something like that. And then I was like, why do you think I live in Frankston? And he's like, oh, I looked up your IP address. And I'm like, totally normal behavior, dude.
Wow, like, that's creepy.
And I'm just like, okay, so like, yeah, I stayed away from that side of online commentary, which I think was good. But yeah, when it went around the world, the Western kind of coverage was very just kind of shock factor. These are these horrible comments, girl's an amputee, how mean, she's appalled, she's shocked, all that. And but then I read one, I can't even remember what country it was in, but they kind of, it was like the laziest coverage. They were just like, they ended it, but oh well, not much we can do about this. And I'm like, what are you in you? Like, do you want to have a stance? Like,
wow.
They were just like, oh, well. And then it got to other areas like Indonesia. It hit Indonesia. And oh, my God, nicest coverage ever.
Oh, really?
I got like a photo posted on the like biggest Instagram page in Indonesia. And then I got like 1,000 followers like that, because this page was huge, and they're all just these like Indonesian people sending me the loveliest messages. Aww. Like, oh, you're so sweet, you're an angel, and I'm just saying like the nicest things. It was like such a contrast from like being trolled to me getting like thousands of messages from Indonesia just telling me like how great I am. And then I also had a photo go up on like a Russian social media website. That was a lot different. So like I started getting like an influx in followers from Russia, and I was like, oh, something must be happening there. And I DM one of them and I'm like, hey, is there like a article or something going on in Russia? And then they sent me a link to this Russian social media website, and they posted the photo of me and stuff, and they just said, oh, she's beautiful or something like that. But the comments were like completely different. The comments were just saying things like, oh, this girl, you know, she doesn't know anything about what it's like to live a hard life. She'll never know what it's like to live on the disability benefit. She's got rich parents, and she's really stupid because she's a model. So she obviously is not very smart, and that's why she does modeling. I'm like, what? And I got like so fired up because I was like, there's one thing of like people like trolling me, but then people just like outright lying. I was like, well, my parents are not rich. Dude, I've worked since I was 15 years old.
It's amazing the things that people can say are wrong with you, aren't it? Like, also that you're and that you're too attractive to have, you know, had a bad life.
Yeah.
The other thing
is, I can't even get benefits. I don't have like residency. Like,
they don't even understand the
benefit if I wanted to.
Isn't it crazy too? Because I feel like if it was a male who was in this position as well, and their Twitter comment went off, one, I don't think it would go off in the way that it has. But I feel like there is like an element of sexism in it. Do you think that that's compounded? You know, we see so many women facing challenges and sexism every day. Do you think that is compounded by having a disability and being thrown in the spotlight like that as well?
Yes, like I definitely think that the whole thing blew up because there was a whole commentary around whether or not people would have sex with me. So I think, you know, that maybe came from a place where they, if I had two legs, they would be attracted to me, but then they've obviously, I'm an amputee, so they're like, oh, this is a conundrum. Am I still attracted to her? Let me discuss this with my think group.
Publicly and tag you.
Yeah, publicly and tag.
I love these people though. Sorry, I was going to say, I love these people that would be commenting would be the biggest trolls you've ever seen commenting about. And you'd be like, I would never have sex with you in my whole life.
I said that to one of them. I was like, I wouldn't. And then he goes, you don't have a choice in it.
I'm like,
cool.
People are disgusting.
Yeah. But so with the, it's actually pretty upsetting. So when it comes to disability, and these issues. So I've, you know, the rates of being content warning, sexual assault, the rates of being sexually assaulted are much higher for disabled women. So especially intellectually disabled women. So it's about a rate of 12 times higher if you were intellectually disabled versus not being intellectually disabled. And NPR did a great article covering this, you know, citing their sources and all of that. If you want to read it, it's heartbreaking, but it's very important. And when I was, I think I was 15 or 16, I was out at the markets with my best friend. My best friend came over from New Zealand to visit me, and we went out shopping. I was like so excited, had my best friend here because I had no friends. Went out shopping, and it's summer. I'm wearing like a summer dress, and we're out. You know, at the markets, how it's like quite crowded. People are brushing up against each other. You know, just flea market type thing, right? And I had this woman come up to me, and she like tapped me on the shoulder, and she was like, oh, "Don't look now, but that man over there just took photos of your dress."
Oh my god!
And I was like, and I'm like, I'm quite a fiery person, so like I'm quite bold and few things that could probably get in a lot of trouble. But I just turned around, I saw this dude, he was carrying like a big professional camera, right? And she said, you know, she saw him put the camera up my dress, he was standing behind me, and saw him do a click, click, click. And I wouldn't have known if this lady didn't tell me, right? And you know, I'm a minor as well, so I'm alone with my friend. And back then I didn't have like, it was, you know, when you had to have credit on your phone, you know, I didn't have credit on my phone. So like, I couldn't call anyone. I'm in a market. The market stalls don't have telephones, you know, it was that kind of thing. There's no security right there that you can call. And the guy was walking away, and I was like, I can't let this guy get away with photos of my dress. So I just went after him. And I said to my friend, I was like, try and get security or something. Like, I'm going to follow this dude. And my friend couldn't get security just because of how the market was, you know, laid out. It's impossible. And so I went and followed the dude. He walked out to the car park, and I was like, so dumb, but I followed him into the car park because, you know, I can be a bit of a dumbass. But I followed him out there, and he was standing there by a car, and he was looking, scrolling through his camera. And I walked up to him, and I was just like, hey, buddy, I'm taking photos. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, what are you taking photos of? He's like, oh, you know, just things around the market. And I was just like, lost it. And I was like, you can probably bleep this out. And I was like, no, you're fucking taking photos of my dress. And I just went off on this dude. And I was like, give me your camera right now. And he, like, obviously wasn't going to give me his camera. And then I, so that's when I started filming and I started recording this dude because I was like, fuck, he's going to get away. And
good
I
on
just,
you. Like,
started recording him when I was following him. So I'm like, following him, recording him while trying to simultaneously get the attention of like the market vendors being like call security because this guy is just going to walk into the crowd and disappear and I'm never going to find him. And as he was walking away, I was kind of like, great, he's deleting the photos because he was doing stuff on his camera rapidly as he was walking away. And he was panicking, like he was very obviously guilty. And he disappeared out of sight. And then I got security for a security guard. I showed him the video. I told him what happened. And he was, like, shaking. He was, like, holding my phone. Just, like, he was obviously just furious. And they caught the guy in the car park again. And he'd wiped the photos by then. The police came. They let him go because they couldn't find any evidence. When, like, for all I know, he just popped the memory card out. But, you know, hopefully he deleted them. But, you know, and my dad got there. And by the time my dad got there... yeah, they let him go. And it was just like, I feel like obviously he probably targeted me because I was an amputee. Maybe that added some curiosity to his creepiness. Like I highly doubt I was the first girl he's ever done that to. But I feel like, you know, me being an amputee definitely came into that. Him feeling like, I don't know, he was entitled to find out what it looked like at my dress or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, that's like one of the experiences I've had.
I think that's such a good story for everyone because you always have to stand up for yourself. Like, good on you for actually chasing him down. I would have smashed his bloody camera.
Well, especially at the age of 16, I couldn't imagine being brave enough to do that. Like, I probably
that guy would not mess with you again.
Yeah, I've done that a few times, like various scenarios, but it's just like I just cannot stand the thought of not pursuing these people who do something like that to me and them getting away with it and me just thinking I should have done this, I should have done that, and like I still have regrets. I wish I grabbed his camera and just threw it on the fucking ground, but but at least I still went after him and scared him.
Right? Oh my gosh, and you would have got in trouble. They always twist these things somehow.
I feel like we should be best friends because I'm that fiery person too that I'll just make it really awkward for everyone and then like nearly get myself in punch-ups because I'm like, because I was one time I was sticking up for Sophie, someone was paying her out. Anyway, I won't go into it. But I feel like if you and I buddied up in Melbourne, we'd be
might be a bit dangerous.
It is dangerous. Like sometimes I'm just like I think back and I'm like, man, I like followed that guy by myself into like a dark street. Like, damn.
If that was a movie, it definitely wouldn't have ended well. Like at those shows that you're like, oh, what are they doing?
Now, moving on to a slightly more positive, like more uplifting topic, it's incredible because I read that
that's
during...
uplifting.
No, I'm sorry. It is.
What, punching people that are doing wrong? I like that topic.
Now, moving on to your modelling, this month you hit a milestone during lockdown. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so I was in bed one night just scrolling on the Insta and this lingerie brand I followed called Blue Bella, they posted up a casting post and it was like an open casting and it was saying, oh, if you want to be a part of a secret project, send us an email or something like that. And I was about to go to bed, so I just put it on my to-do list. I was like, okay, email Blue Bella in the morning. And then I woke up in the morning and the post was gone. And I was like, oh no, I should have done this last night. You know, like obviously they're going to get a lot of applications and so on. So I DM'd them and I was just like, hey, like I know your post is gone, but is there any chance I can still apply for the project? And they replied and they were like, yes, of course. So I emailed them just saying I want to be a part of it, a bit about myself. I had no idea what it was at this point, but I figured lingerie brand needs content, got to be some kind of modeling opportunity. And then they replied and they were like, yes, we'd love to have you, congratulations on the casting. And it was a world's largest online catwalk show, they called it. So they had over 1,000 people apply for it. So I was super lucky to get it. And then they sent out lingerie pieces to, I think, 200 women to submit videos. And it was my first catwalk casting. And it's so weird because it's in isolation. You know, I've never walked on a real catwalk, but I got my first casting from isolation. So that was pretty cool.
That's so cool.
It was like a reminder that, like, I can still have little, you know, achievements while I'm in my house.
I feel like that's the biggest achievement anyone in isolation in Australia's probably had. Yeah.
And so I did the video. My boyfriend helped me record it, and it was so weird because you had to send in, like, all these kind of different shots of you walking different ways and doing different things and, like, doing dances, and I've never danced in my life. I'm like, oh my god, that's gonna be so bad. Yeah, and you know how, like, the Victoria's Secret, you get to the end and you have to do the corny, like,
yeah, like the shimmy kind of stuff.
Although, oh no, my friends always laugh at this stuff so well. And then so I sent that in, and then they asked me to be a part of the press release. So you guys are probably familiar when things like this happen, brands will send out press releases to various publications, and if they want to write something about it, they will.
Mm-hmm.
And they, Blue Bella emailed me being like, oh, we'd like to feature you in the press release. I was like, sick, cool. So then I got a little write-up after that. The video came out, and it was, I was really happy with it. I had to stay up because it came out, they're in the London, so it came out at like 1 a.m. here. But I was super happy with how it turned out. And it was also another one of those things we told you about where I'm self-conscious about something. I'll just like go all out. So I've never actually shown like the backside of my amputation before. Mm-hmm. Because this is like a kind of weird thing to show us, would be like posting an ass shot if I did. And I've never done that before. So, and the next minute I'm doing the world's largest online fashion show in lingerie and I'm walking away from the camera. It was nowhere near as bad as I expected it to look in my head for my entire life. So through that experience, I was also like, oh, doesn't even look that bad. 20 years later, I've realized that.
Isn't that crazy? It's like when you put yourself out there, you finally realize, oh, yeah, like I've been worrying about this and I should have never.
People don't really have anything to compare it to either. They're not going to be like, oh, well, that doesn't look like the other girl with a hemi pelvic to me. A lingerie show, like, you know, I'm just gonna be, I can't really say that it's not up to par, whatever.
You're making your own standard. I love that, like, yeah. I was gonna say, I love that it's like, as you say, you know, going on Clio or doing this fashion show, like you're going out there out of your comfort zone, but in such a massive way. It's just
I love it. Yeah
It's amazing.
Well, then it's just like, okay, nothing more can be done here, like,
exactly, you're just doing it on the biggest stage possible.
What was the feedback like anyway?
It was good, all positive. You know, reading the comments and stuff, and because after they posted the video as well, they posted just a photo of me that I took and the one of the pieces they sent me, and all the comments on that were very well received. You know, everyone's all for diversity and stuff like that now, and I feel like the people that already follow Blue Bella were already a part of that because they're already quite a diverse brand, and they're one of those brands that, you know, they don't post a photo of a model that doesn't, you know, fit the Victoria's Secret standard and then post it with a big disclaimer about, oh, this is why we're posting a photo of a model who's not a size zero. You know how, like, some brands, every time they showcase diversity, they have to come with a big show and tell about, oh, this is why we're doing it. It's like, no, just do it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
We don't need to have a disclaimer about why you have diverse models.
It ruins the purpose of doing it.
Exactly. It's just like, we're not going to fit in if you're constantly pointing us out. Like,
exactly.
Just do it. So, yeah, the feedback was great. And, yeah, Blue Bella was quite happy, I think, just because from the follow-up kind of press that it got as well. And it got, a lot of engagement for them as well. So overall, it was really good.
That's heaps good. I was gonna ask lastly, if you could go back knowing everything you know now, what would you tell your, I'm gonna say 13-year-old self, but maybe it's more your 11 and 12-year-old self who was going through that awkward high school transition. Yeah, what's one piece of advice you would tell yourself?
I think it would be basically don't stop doing something because you're worried about people watching you or staring at you, because doesn't matter what you do, they're going to stare at you. Yeah, so I just stopped doing so many things like playing sports and stuff because I got sick of the attention and the crowds. And I've come to learn, you know, it doesn't matter what I do, people are going to crowd around and stare, even if I'm just getting groceries. So I may as well just do what I want to do and ignore, you know, what the bystanders are saying.
Yeah, let them have a look.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Your story was so incredible, though. Like, I feel like so many people will love to listen to it and get something out of it.
Yeah. Thanks so much. I hope so.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Outspoken. If you did enjoy today's show, we'd love if you could tag us in your Insta story so we can reshare it. And if you would like to find out more about Cherie, she is an incredibly talented writer, and we've linked below her Patreon account details so you can go and follow her. Thanks so much.